This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. There are 42 million debit cards and 8 million credit cards to a population of 30 million for Malaysia. 8 point of sales units per 1,000 people, and the number is 22 to 35 in developed markets. There are 19 million internet banking subscribers, of which 8 million are active in Malaysia. In the light of recent hikes in the fees paid between banks for payment card transactions, Bank Negara has capped fees for credit cards at 1.1% from up to 1.8% previously, and for debit cards, 0.21% from about 1% previously. Today, we're going to talk about e-payments and debit cards and why they are important and beneficial to us. Joining us is Tanya Chuan, Director of Payment Systems with Bank Negara Malaysia. Good morning, Tan. Let's talk about plastic. Now, credit cards and, to a lesser extent, debit cards have hidden fees. The one or two banks who are involved in a particular transaction need to cover their costs and make profits. And the costs come in the form of, number one, financing costs, because banks pay merchants in a very short time period, but the credit card holder takes some time to repay banks. And number two, the costs are also incurred to make a sign up. I mean, I see a lot of credit card salespeople in the malls. They're ubiquitous and those guys need to be paid. So we don't see these fees because they are charged to the merchants. Now, given this picture, the question is, how bad can this go for the economy?
The way that cards work in terms of a transaction is that the merchants will be charged a merchant fee by the acquiring banks.
And Can you define acquiring banks?
Acquiring banks are the merchant's bank. They're the banks that provide the terminals and the services that allow for the authorization of those transactions and facilitate the settlement.
So these are the like Maybank or CIMB that goes out and issues a person either a credit card or a debit card?
No, these are the same banks that issue the cards and they're called the issuing banks, but okay. They also sometimes double up as the acquiring banks and become the bankers for the merchants. So if you look at a two-sided situation where Maybank issues a card to their cardholders, they will be referred to as the issuing bank. But if another bank acquires, say CIMB acquires a merchant, they will be the acquiring banks until they become the acquiring bank for the merchants. In providing the services to the merchants, they will charge the merchants a merchant fee. Now, the acquiring bank needs to then compensate the issuing bank for charges which are assumed by the issuing banks. And these will include the authorizing and the processing of those transactions. And so between the acquiring bank and the issuing bank, there is some compensation which is called the interchange fee. And this interchange fee is decided by the payment card network. So what this means is that when the acquiring bank has to pay the issuing bank, it will be built into the merchant fees which are charged to the merchants. And when these interchange fees go up, and they do on some occasions, because the different payment card networks will compete amongst themselves. So in persuading their issuing banks to issue more of the cards of their brand, they will raise those interchange fees to compete. And so issuing banks that issue more cards of that brand will stand to gain more from the higher interchange. Now, if two big networks fight between themselves to compete for the market share of the same participants that are in the marketplace, then we will have escalation of interchange fees. And when that happens, we will have an escalation of merchant fees across the country. And how would merchants recover such costs? It would be quite obvious that the merchants are likely to raise the cost of goods and services to recover those operational costs that have risen up.
Now, typically, these fees that are being charged are to the extent of 2.5% to the merchants?
It ranges from 1.5% to 2.5% for the merchants. Their pricing, depending on what the risk appetite are for the different acquiring banks. And so in some cases, it will have a higher level than others because of the business proposition that the acquiring banks see.
Now, you talked about how the merchants would then have to recover these costs by passing them on to consumers. What is the real inflationary effects that we are seeing from this competition in the credit card market?
Well, because interchange fees cut across the entire spectrum of all the merchants, it is a wholesale price that is going to be priced in across all merchant segments. So a revision in interchange fees across affects all merchants, regardless of whether they are small or large businesses. So in that sense, you would have a very pervasive rise in merchant fees because of a tweak in the interchange fees.
This morning, we have Tan Yat Chuan, who's Director of Payment Systems for Bank Negara Malaysia, and we're talking about e-payments, debit cards, and credit cards. And Tan, this brings me to Bank Negara's 10-year financial sector blueprint that actually sketches out the milestones till 2020 of what you want to achieve. Can you take us through a little bit of what this blueprint tries to achieve?
Bank Negara's policy objective is to foster safe, efficient, reliable, and competitive payment systems. It's our policy objective to bring about efficiencies. And so in our development of our blueprint, we have targets that we have set to modernize the country's payment system to bring about efficiency and cost savings, thereby raising the level of competitiveness for Malaysia. The five key areas that we look at are the price signal, the market incentive structure, widening the accessibility, improving the quality of e-payments, and building awareness and confidence. These have been our focus areas in bringing about a transformation that will see greater efficiency in the use of e-payments. As you know, e-payments cost about a third to half of paper-based instruments. Our key objective is to displace as much checks and cash with more cost-effective e-payment means.
Before we left off, we were talking about Bank Negara's blueprint. I guess to translate and interpret what the blueprint is trying to achieve is essentially lowering costs for consumers through the e-payment system. Going back to credit cards, debit cards, and the kind of fees that are incurred, what can you tell us about the cost reduction aspects of what the blueprint achieved? What are some of the, for example, the disinflationary effects?
If you think about what paper instruments would cost a bank, as well as to the businesses, from the bank's perspective, it's a manual, intensive process where they would have to deploy man hours to eyeball the signature of the issuer of the check. They will have to examine the paper to see if it's a genuine check. And so this entails a lot of man hours required for the processing of each of these transactions, as opposed to electronic payments, which are almost automated and go on a straight-through processing way. It will have a faster crediting time. And so consumers would benefit from receiving those money much faster than relying on checks to clear, because there's always uncertainty in terms of a check bouncing when there's insufficient funds. So from the perspective of the banks, it costs a range from about 2 over ringgit to about as high as 5.60. And an average cost of 3 ringgit. For e-payments, for instance, IBG, it cost the bank at today's level of volume about 50 cents. Bank Negara has addressed the price signal of these instruments, because as checks, we perceive it to be free when we do not see how the recovery of these costs are made by the banks. Mm-hmm. It's likely to come indirectly through lower payments of dividends or interest from our current accounts. In addressing the price signal, we hope to encourage the consumers and businesses to use the more efficient e-payments.
You mentioned some of those very interesting figures. For example, I guess IBG or Internet Banking Giro, some of the online transfers are very familiar to all of us who have online banking accounts. And we've noticed that the fees have dropped substantially. It used to cost 2 ringgit to transfer. Today, it costs no more than 10 cents to transfer. Take us through the policy process of Bank Negara. Have Bank Negara used some kind of very persuasive process for what is a very commercial decision?
Well, we call this our pricing reform measures that we have instituted. In May of 2013, we've issued out a circular to require banks to reduce the IBG cost from 2 ringgit to 10 cents. Now, this, of course, is below cost. And so there is perhaps some pushback in terms of that revision. But the opportunity for the banks here is that they will be able to reduce their processing costs. So if a check costs them 3 ringgit to process, and if they can eliminate the check, they would basically save 3 ringgit. Now, if they produce an IBG at 50 cents but charge 10 cents, then they would lose 40 cents for each IBG. So a savings of 33 ringgit would actually benefit the bank a lot more than the loss leading that they take on the price of the IBG.
Now, of course, Bank Negara has achieved great strides in displacing checks, because if you look at the rate of decline, it has accelerated throughout the years for check. I mean, 2015 alone, 17% less checks being used. But are you going as far as eliminating checks altogether?
No, Julian. If you look at our financial sector blueprint, we started off with 205 million checks in year 2011. We aim to bring it down by half to 100 million checks by year 2020. We think that there will be segments of the economy that will continue to use the checks, but we will nudge them through our price signal for them to be more encouraged to use the more efficient payment systems.
So there is the problem of transferring very large amounts online, for example, millions, right? It's hard to do this through an online mechanism. And of course, you have Rentas. Explain to us a little bit more about what Rentas is all about.
Rentas is the large value payment systems. And these are large value payments that go between banks. And of course, you do have third party payments that also go via Rentas as well. And so these large value payment systems have adequate security. Today, we know of no fraud that has gone through Rentas. And Bank Negara will continue to do its surveillance and supervision over the adequacy of risk management and security for the processing of large value payments.
Will we ever see a zero cost or zero fee interbank transfer?
Possibly, Julian, because some banks would like to position themselves as a bank that offers such free services. And in some markets, we've seen that taking place. And perhaps it will come to our shore when banks promote their services for free to attract consumers and businesses to bank with them. So we think that this will be a positive outcome if banks compete on that front.
On The Breakfast Grill this morning is Tanya Chuan, Director of Payment Systems with Bank Negara Malaysia, and we're talking about e-payments, debit cards and credit cards. I think the other part of Bank Negara's blueprint is also to encourage the use of more debit cards than credit cards, or debit cards than cash, right? You're trying to move into a kind of cashless society. How are debit cards cheaper than any of these measures?
If we look at debit cards, the hurdle level for an acceptance of a debit card is the interchange. And with the reform measures that we have taken, the interchange levels have been dropped by about 5 times. So this is an opportune time for merchants to facilitate acceptance of my card, of the debit card. In terms of cash, we make effort to withdraw cash at the ATM, so that will take time. And we take the risk of carrying that cash. And if we carry the debit card instead, then if we drop our wallet, we won't lose that amount of money, because we can call the banks and they can terminate our cards almost instantaneously, as compared to losing all the cash in our wallet. So in that sense, there's benefits and cost savings from the consumer's perspective in not having to make trips to the ATMs, in not putting themselves at risk in carrying a large amount of money. In terms of merchants, they wouldn't basically be having to require that number of man hours in counting, sorting, and guarding against cash. And of course, the risk of pilferage and theft would also be eliminated by not having too much cash in their tills.
A lot of people are worried about it, though. They worry about security. They worry about hacking over the internet. And there is the inconvenience also, of course, in trying to remember a PIN number. I mean, if you lose that PIN number, so it causes a lot of inconveniences.
I think in most of our daily life, there are some necessary evil that we will have to observe, and such as guarding our confidential information and doing safe online practices. But there are a lot more benefits to gain out of this. Imagine that we can stay at home, work from home, and we can make our payments online. We never have to step out from our house, and we save our trips to the banks to do banking transactions. We save our trips to pay our utility bills. There are a lot more benefits from going online, and if we take the trouble to understand what those safe practices are, we will not become victims of fraud. So in that sense, there's a need for us to learn about those safe practices and do online transactions from which we will benefit a lot more.
What about the investments from the viewpoint of certain merchants, especially the smaller merchants, the mom-and-pop stalls? Would they need to invest substantially? Would that be an impediment to them?
I think merchants have to perhaps do some form of cost-benefit and review. If you look at most economies, it becomes more pervasive to accept payment cards because costs have been driven down. In Malaysia, we have a target to reach 800,000 terminals in year 2020 from about 240,000 terminals in 2014. And at this stage, the banks are pushing out a significant number of terminals, and there's huge economies of scale to drive costs down. This is likely to be an opportune time for most merchants to basically jump onto the bandwagon. There are various types of terminals available that will meet their budgets.
But we, you know, if you were a fruit seller or a chocolate seller, right, would the cost of adoption be prohibitive?
Right. Merchants, depending on their needs, will be offered a range of terminals. So smaller merchants perhaps can look forward to dongles that can be plugged into their smartphones. It costs between 200 to 300 ringgit. And these dongles can be carried around quite freely. And so if you're actually setting up a hawker stall, you can bring it with you. And if you're moving on to a different part to do your business, you can bring that along with you as well.
This will actually really open up the economy. I mean, it's not just hawkers and fruit sellers. It's also in the new economy whereby a lot of young people now are doing a lot of freelancing work. They can actually efficiently sell the services through this kind of mechanisms.
That's right. So you can accept payment cards wherever you're at, in the fields, at the streets, at home. It makes business opportunities present itself. The other area that the country will be more competitive in is that we will be able to take more tourist spending when they run out of cash as they visit these smaller stalls.
Do you think that there would be a section of society that would be resistant to this idea, right? They still want to deal in cash. There are the legitimate ones, but also the people who are involved in the black economy, the more fraudulent parts of the economy. How intensified are your efforts to make everyone adopt this cashless way of doing things?
I think competitive pressure will find its equilibrium, in a sense that if you are a merchant and you're receiving cash only, and your competitors are open to receive payment cards, you will feel the pressure to also accept payment cards when your consumers flock to your neighboring competitor to do more business. In that sense, we see that the competitive forces will bring about an accelerated adoption if this is done on an industry-wide basis.
So you think that in terms of investing into technology, and technology is constantly changing, would merchants as well as consumers themselves, I mean, consumers would have to, you know, buy into all sorts of smartphones and smart devices to be in the future able to participate in this kind of cashless society. How future-proof is Malaysia in this sense?
If you look at what's happening at in other parts of the world, a lot of the payment devices have come onto the marketplace, and it leverages on the technology. So it's not a technology that we will have to buy into, really, but the payment instruments will find its way into our devices. So if you carry a Samsung phone or an iPhone, you're likely to be given payment instruments that have been fitted in by some of these global players that will allow you to do perhaps what we call an NFC payment or near field communications payment, which means that you just need to initialize your phone to be able to tap against a contactless reader for you to make payments.
We've been also reading a lot about Bitcoins over the past few years, and Bitcoins is increasingly being used and accepted by people who trade on the internet. But the other thing about Bitcoin is also the blockchain technology, which kind of guarantees anonymity as well as guarantees some form of security. Is Bank Negara looking into this kind of thing?
We are obviously looking at all these new developments, and we would like to basically temper our regulatory intervention at a more opportune time. And going in with a high-handed approach at a time when a technology is still in its infant stage could stifle it. So it's best that we look at the right time for us to issue regulatory requirements if there's a need for it. But we believe that Bitcoin today does not feature as a good substitute to money. And it's still very exclusive to some of the segments of the economy in their use. And it's not pervasive for us to basically put our regulatory intervention to prevent it from being abused.
Going back to the financial sector blueprint, it's a 10-year blueprint that started in 2011. This is 2016, and we're 5 years into the blueprint. Where does Malaysia stand in terms of where we are as a cashless society, as an e-payment society, compared to the more developed economies? And what kind of targets do you have for this?
Our blueprint specifies that we will have to hit a target of 200 e-payments per capita.
Where is it right now?
It's about 82, and we started off at 49. So we are probably close to the halfway mark, and there needs to be further efforts that we will have to put in for the remaining 5 years. In terms of the payment card terminals, we have a target of 25 terminals per 1,000 inhabitants. We're at 9. And we started off at 7. And this is mainly because our regulatory reform measures have just been put in place. And the current industry collaborative efforts to deploy terminals as well as to reissue our cards to be contactless is well underway. It's only when we have a widespread availability of the terminals that we will see that cash can be dampened. So it will take some years, and we hope that we will achieve it by year 2020.
Well, do you think we will achieve a total cashless society in our lifetime?
It's never happened in any parts of the world. And I think if we can come close to advanced economies, we would have reached a level of efficiency and competitiveness similar to that of the advanced economies.
Thank you very much for your time. And that was Tanya Chuan, Director of Payment Systems for Bank Negara Malaysia, on this morning's Breakfast Grill. I'm Julian Ng, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.